This is the Motley Fool Radio Show with David Gardner, and if you're approaching retirement age, you're not alone. Every 8 seconds, another North American baby boomer turns 60. That's around 11,000 each day for those who like to do the math, 4.5 million each year. Hey, someone just turned 60. So what will it mean for society, and what will it mean for you? Enter our next guest. Ken Dykewald is a psychologist, gerontologist, and author of 10 books on aging-related issues, including the new book, The Power Years, A User's Guide to the Rest of Your Life. He joins us from San Francisco, California. Ken Dykewald, thanks for joining us on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Great to be with you.
Ken, I just read the stat. Come January, every 8 seconds, another North American baby boomer will be turning 60. What's that mean for society?
Well, it will cause a radical shift in all things having to do with our lives. Keep in mind that throughout 99% of human history, the average life expectancy worldwide was less than 18 years. And so the point is actually quite simple, and that is that throughout all of history, most people didn't live very long. Life was short. Some people might have seen a 50th or 70th birthday, but they were very few. What's happening today is that life expectancy is elevating. And not only that, we've got this massive baby boom generation who, because of their enormous demographic heft, have kind of reshaped society as they've migrated across the lifeline. And now that they're heading towards 60 plus, I think we can expect that pretty well everything is about to be transformed.
So 100 years ago, there was no retirement planning?
No, I mean, think about it. On the first day of the 20th century, the life expectancy was only 47. And so, you know, couples didn't get up and say, gee, honey, what would you like to do after retirement? Because you weren't going to have a retirement. Mm. And not only that, but most people thought that, you know, a 50 or a 60-year-old life was a full life. Now we wake up in the morning thinking, well, gee, I might live to be 80. I might live to be 90. Frankly, a lot of us are going to live to be 100. And so all of a sudden, people are beginning to wonder, what happens to me after my 60th birthday? Should I retire? Should I not retire? Do I have enough money to fund a retirement? What kind of retirement would I like to do? And add in the boomers' desire to kind of do things their own way and not do them exactly as their moms and dads have done them. I think what you're about to see is retirement is going to be radically transformed. And by the way, for most boomers, about 80% of boomers, they say they'd rather keep working, but they may not want to work full time, and they may want to even try a whole new career. So the idea of retiring from work in your early 60s and then spending the next 20 or 25 years living the life of leisure is actually not what people are hoping for. It's not the dream that most of us are having anymore.
Mm. And in fact, another stat from your book similar to this, 2/3 of all the men and women who have ever lived past 65 in the entire history of the world are alive today.
Yeah, that's for me one of the more staggering dimensions of all this. You know, our moms and dads, in a sense, are like the retirement guinea pigs. The idea of living into your 7th or 8th or 9th decade of life, nobody's really ever had to figure that out before. As you mentioned, 2/3 of all the people who've ever lived past 65 in the entire history of the world are alive today. And so what's happening is we're just beginning to kind of explore maturity. You know, what should I be doing when I'm 70? Should I be an astronaut or should I be a golfer? Should I fall in love again if I'm widowed or single? Or is there time for me to go back to school? These are all questions that are being asked, not by a few people, but now by tens of millions of people. And the neat thing is that society is beginning to wake up to this growth, what I call the growth of maturity, what I call an age wave. More and more you're seeing community colleges opening their doors to older people. Mm. More and more companies are beginning to hire 62 and 72-year-olds. You know, athletes are staying in the game longer. Dating services for singles who are 50 and 60 are multiplying. Adventure travel businesses are exploding. Pharmaceutical companies are gearing their marketing towards the older adult population. You know, I just read the other day that, you know, the Eagles completely sold out their national tour. M&M had half his seats empty. So, you know, those are older workers that are getting the crowd. What's beginning to happen is that a youth-oriented society is now beginning to age. And not age in yesterday's fashion. Retreat, decline, withdrawal. We're beginning to envision a whole new possibility for life, which is why I think of it as the power years.
We've already used the word older a few times during our interview, and I know at speaking events you ask people what age they think constitutes old. What is considered old these days?
Well, it's a crazy thing because the year 65, the age 65, tends to be the marker that most people have floating around in their heads. And But if you stop and think, well, where did that come from? As it turns out, 65 was selected to be the marker of old age in the 1880s by Baron Otto von Bismarck as he was crafting Europe's first pension plan. He had to pick an age at which people would be so enfeebled, so disabled, that they just couldn't get up and work. And he picked 65. But let's keep in mind that the life expectancy in Europe and the United States that year was only 45 years. So if we were to use the same formula today, we'd be retiring people at around 97. So then the question becomes, well, wait a minute. If we're living longer and longer and longer, and by the way, staying younger, decades longer than our parents or grandparents ever imagined possible, when does old age begin today? Most surveys point to somewhere between 75 and 80 as the new marker of old age. And for example, I'm 55. What I think is happening is that as we begin to remodel maturity and make it a more youthful, hip, active, empowered time of life, there's a very good possibility that with a few additional medical breakthroughs in the years to come, we won't think of people as old until they're 85 or 90.
Noted money manager and prognosticator Harry Dent predicts that spending in the stock market will decline sharply beginning around 2010 as baby boomers move out of their peak spending years. Ken, do you agree?
I actually don't. I'm a fan of Harry Dent. I respect his work, but I think he's quite wrong on this point. The model that Harry works on is the idea that when people reach their early 60s, they stop working, stop earning. And then if that happens, people, you know, adjust their portfolio, become more frugal, stop buying new cars, stop buying gifts for their grandkids, and kind of wind it up economically. By the way, if the entire baby boom generation retired that way, it would be a rough ride for the economy. Why do I think Harry's wrong? Because all the studies today are showing that people want to keep working longer. They want to keep earning longer. People want to keep buying sports cars and take great vacations and be able to do the things they want to do. And so I think this notion of an entire generation shutting down the economy as a result of being out of the workforce doesn't sync with what's coming.
I agree. We spent a lot of time on this show talking about investing. Ken, this stat caught our eye from your book. 66 cents of every dollar in the equity markets is invested by people over 50 today. 66 cents of every dollar.
Yeah, David, it's quite a seismic, actually. We tend to think of older adults as being poor and frugal and not having money to spend. And that might have been the case a couple of decades ago when the poverty levels among older adults was very high. But today, it's exactly the opposite. People over 50 today actually have 70% of all the wealth in America belongs to them. 77% of all the money in savings and loan institutions is owned by them. As you said, two-thirds of every dollar invested in the equity markets owned by them. Last year, they bought 80% of all the luxury travel, 55% of all the luxury cars, 74% of all the pharmaceutical products. This is an amazing thing because if you turn on your TV, you're going to see a lot of young kids in the ads. Turns out those young kids are broke. It's their parents that have the money.
A lot of your work is involved talking about and looking at old age as an adventure, as something to be excited and optimistic about. We do, of course, know of many people who have health problems in their retirement years and a reduced quality of life. In a previous book, Ken, you wrote about Alzheimer's. Share some insights from your work on Alzheimer's.
Well, we've got sort of a choice here. We're at a crossroads. We know we're going to be living longer, and we know there's going to be a lot of us living longer. So the question is, well, what kind of life will that be for us, or how will our society handle that? Let's use Alzheimer's as an example. Here's a neurologic condition that rises up in the very later years of life, but in horrible ways. Over the age of 85, the Alzheimer's dementia rate right now is 47%. So, David, that's one in two people. Right now, we have 4 million Americans with Alzheimer's. Unless we find a cure or a prevention or a better treatment, the projections are there'll be 16 million boomers with Alzheimer's. And instead of it lasting 8 to 10 years, because we might be better at beating diseases like cancer and heart disease, you may have people with dementia that lasts for decades. By the way, that would be the sinkhole into which the 21st century falls. On the other hand, more and more people are waking up to the problems of an aging body. You've got a generation that does not want to look old or feel old or suffer pain or fall apart. And a lot of us now are watching our moms and dads get beaten down by some of these problems and conditions, and you're seeing a rising up within the population for to shift our medical system and our scientific priorities to hopefully create a healthier version of aging. And if I might add one other piece to this, David, When we think of longer life, there's two ways to think about that. One way is to assume that we're going to live longer, but be old longer. So we take people who are old and we just give them more longevity. The way I'd prefer to think about it is this. If you knew that you might have another 5 or 10 or 20 years of life beyond what humans used to live, where would you put them? Well, nobody wants to put them at the end, honestly. What most people would say is, well, gee, if I knew I was going to live longer, I'd like to take that longevity bonus and be 40 for 30 years. I'd like to be 50 for decades. I'd like to get to the place in my life where I'm smart, I'm experienced, I've got money, I've got connections, and expand that period of my life. And that's, frankly, a key point I was trying to make in this new book, The Power Years, because I think what we're not really talking about is the multiplication of old age. I think particularly for the boomers we're talking about, imagine having extra decades in the middle of your life, maybe even like a middle essence, where you've got more strength, more knowledge, more capacity than you ever had before. And by the way, more free time. What would you do with those extra decades of life? But as a society, we do need to be thinking a few further decades downstream. What happens if we don't beat some of these terrible diseases? Or what happens if large numbers of us don't start to take our financial planning more seriously? We may have, on the one hand, mass pandemics of disease. Or on the other hand, another train wreck might be a high percentage of elder poverty, both of which are preventable if we take action now.
I was at a medical conference in your state of California, actually, earlier this summer. Some very serious people looking at medical technology, experienced, and one of them talked about the possibility of very, very long life in the decades ahead. So almost to the point, perhaps, that you'll only die if you suffer some catastrophic experience, but that old age could extend for a long, long time. What do you think the prospects for something like that are? Have you actually come across any of that thinking in your research?
All the time. But often people don't talk about it in the media. It's sort of this secret world going on out there with regard to life extension and anti-aging. Let me give you my point of view about it. Since the year 1900, with every decade that's passed, the average life expectancy has lifted 2.5 years. That's pretty fantastic. And I, for one, think it's going to continue to lift. We're going to see incremental and maybe even some terrific breakthroughs in the treatment of cancer and dementia and heart disease and arthritis and such, and diabetes, I hope, so that living to be 90 or 95 will be quite commonplace. However, I also think that we're heading to almost a brave new world of breakthroughs. I've been in laboratories where scientists have told me that we can now locate the biologic clock and conceivably even turn it off. I've been in other laboratories where I've seen bones being regenerated. I've been in other laboratories where people say they're only 5 to 10 years away from remarkable breakthroughs that would literally allow the body to remain in a kind of an ageless state. Now, you might say, or I might say, well, God, that's science fiction. I don't know. It might be science fiction, but boy, if we're talking about a breakthrough of that magnitude in the next 5 or 10 years, or 20 years even, that would affect our lives, I actually think it's coming. By the way, at the risk of distressing some of your listeners, I'm not sure that everybody will be able to get access to it. What I see happening in the orbits in which I travel is that very, very wealthy people are beginning to develop kind of hotwire connections to some of these great scientists, with the idea being that if breakthroughs occur, and perhaps they might be available in Singapore or Thailand or South America or in some tropical island, you know, think Jurassic Park, G-E-R-A-S-S-I-C, I think what you might find happening is that people who have a great deal of money will buy their way to longevity or buy their way to extended youth, and the masses won't be able to get their hands on it, which is something that the world has never even contemplated. But do I think that there's a decent chance that if you play your cards right and you take good care of your body, that you and many of the listeners might live to 95 or 100? Absolutely.
Ken, let's close on a personal note. Our listeners may be stunned to hear that you've been married 22 times. Could you explain?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I married my wife, Maddie, 22 years ago. And the night we got married, I said, you know, this is really fun. We ought to do this every year. But I said, let's make it interesting. Let's get married each year. And by the way, our wedding date is Thanksgiving. Let's get married each year in a different location with a different religion. And we've actually done that all these years. It's pretty terrific. I would tell you, by the way, I recommend it. I think that in a longer-lived era, you have to keep reinventing yourself. You have to keep making yourself and your relationships fresh again. And so every year, my wife and I, we go off. We've been married in a castle in Bath, England. We got married in Cambodia. We got married at the Chapel of Love in Las Vegas. We got married Buddhist in Berkeley.
Is it true that you were married in the nude?
One of our weddings was held in a ceremony where we actually had no clothes on at the end of the ceremony. That's correct. We
behaved ourselves. Which religion is that, by the way?
That was the get naked religion. You know, I'll tell you something. It's funny. There was a mention of this multiple marriages in my life. I have a fabulous wife and great kids. And I really do think that, you know, people hear about we get remarried every year. And at first they cock their head and say, well, that's kind of a nutty thing to do. And then they say, you know what? That's not a bad idea. I think your marriage can get lost in a busy life. And, you know, one of the things about living past 50 is you get to think about kind of what's important and what's not. And I can tell you from my own life, David, you know, I've worked hard on books. I've created businesses. I have a very active work schedule. But at the end of the day, there's a few things that matter more than anything else. And I know there's a lot of attention focused on eating your green beans and taking your vitamins, and that'll help you live a long, healthy life. But I actually have come to the conclusion that it's the quality of your relationships. It's getting time with the people who really matter. It's being true to yourself that at the end of the day is going to help you live a long, enriched life.
Ken Dykwald is the author of the new book, The Power Years, A User's Guide to the Rest of Your Life. Ken Dykwald, thanks for joining us on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Thank you.
I'm getting old before my time. Just work.